Susie and the Banshees, Hong Kong Garden. Perfect introduction for my next guest, who's Hans Versloes, who's the author of a book, London's Burning, an exploration in punk subculture. Good morning, Hans.
Good morning, Chris.
So this book is you're publishing it now, but it has origins in the past, doesn't it?
Yes, it was my thesis for my BA in sociology in 1980. That I had to write to get the degree in sociology. So at the time, I did this at the University of Antwerp in Belgium, and it was written in Dutch, and it was only published then in photocopy form. And but people here in New Zealand have been asking me for so long, can we please read it? So I had some time in the last 12 months to actually translate it and then actually publish it properly.
Good stuff. Now, I'm actually going to ask you just to pull a little bit closer to the microphone. Sure. There, just to help us out there. So, when you wrote this, were you in London? Were you immersed in the punk subculture?
No, I lived in Belgium, but I travelled to London quite a bit to do research and to, you know, do total immersion, basically.
Yeah, yeah, a good excuse to go to a few punk gigs.
Exactly.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And what were your favourites back in the day?
Wire and Susie and the Banshees, of course, very good, but I never actually saw them. Joy Division, which was a bit later, but it was originally part of that whole scene as well. So, yeah, those were the two of my favourites.
Excellent. Now, so when you were writing your thesis, I mean, was it really just you thought, well, I love this stuff, so this is a good excuse, or was there something else that drew you to it?
Well, the university or you know, my lecturers and tutors allowed me to tackle this subject, so I was really happy to do that. So it was great for my motivation to actually make a go of it and do a really good job. So I was really very happy to to do something, to write something about my own life, basically, and link it to the study I did then.
What about the punk scene in Belgium?
Well, it was quite developed as well, and it because it's not very far from England, it's only across the Channel, and we had access to British radio, so we could listen to John Peel and his new music that he promoted very much as one of the first DJs in the world to actively support the punk scene. So Belgium was very much at the forefront as well. We had lots of punk bands and gigs and clubs where punk rock music could be heard.
Yeah, well, the X, were the X?
They were Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch, right, okay. Plastic Bertrand is the only one that ever knows, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, he must be about the most internationally known, it's more new wave than punk rock, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I still remember that song being a lot of fun when it was playing on TV here back then.
Ça plane pour moi.
Yeah. Right, so, okay, so you were getting around, and so your research, I presume, how did you go about researching this?
Well, it was actually quite difficult to research it theoretically because it was so new. There was simply very little available for me to consult, read about it, or there was only the raw press material that was, of course, completely distorted reportage about all the violence and all the stuff that was surrounding punk that was sort of very negative in the mainstream, you know, especially tabloid reporting. But there was, of course, a lot of local fanzines that punks wrote themselves, so there was a lot of material available that way, but I still had to dig it out and try to find it. And, of course, all the music wasn't very readily available either, because there was no such thing as the internet or MP3 players or sharing of files or anything like that. So music was either live or on cassette form or little record labels that were willing to release punk rock records. It was always very difficult, even for the big bands like the Sex Pistols. It took them ages to find a record label that would actually put out their music without any censorship. So
and what was it that you were exploring most? Was it the do-it-yourself nature of it, the rebellion, or the mock rebellion, or what was it you were looking at?
I think the rebellion was real. It wasn't mock. There was a lot of art involved as well, but it the whole scene attracted me because it was very new and very exciting and interesting on a lot of levels. And it was, of course, a new subculture. You had, you know, the teddy boys and the mods and the skinheads before, and this was, you know, one step further. And so, because it was very new, I did place it in that context of earlier British subcultures, as you know, how the press treated earlier subcultures and how the press now treated punk in the same way, as a sort of a moral panic. Society is going to end because these young people are running riot, and they have yellow hair and they or green hair, and they go around and beat everybody up, and they have violence at all their concerts and everything. So all that sort of distortion was very much my focus of repairing that, and to look at it from a more distant perspective in the greater context of this whole subcultural revolutionary movements that have happened before.
All right, so we might take a listen to a song now, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about, you know, you're revisiting your thesis. I mean, I don't know, if I look back at the things I wrote at university, I kind of cringe, so I want to talk about that a little bit. I'm talking to Hans Versloos about his new book, London's Burning, An Exploration in Punk Subculture, Joy Division being one of Hans's favourites from back in the day. So we talked before the song about how this this book originated as your thesis in 1980, and I was saying, you know, if I look back at stuff I wrote at university, I kind of go, oh dear, you know, was I really kind of that worthy and pious? So, I mean, you must have gone through a similar kind of experience revisiting this.
Yeah, it was quite strange to look back on your, you know, 21-year-old self and what you were obsessed by and what you wanted to do and your ambitions and your anger at the time too. So I hope it's still readable like that, and it reflects very much its time. I've made a literal translation. I didn't edit anything from the Dutch version into English, so it reads as it was written then. And I've only added some recent literature since 1980, because so much has been written about punk rock, and probably so much better than that, than the book, and also a lot of web references are now available. You can watch some wonderful homemade punk rock or punk videos of people walking down the King's Road in London in glorious Super 8 Technicolor. It's really on YouTube. It's really beautiful. So all those references are in the book now as well, which I've added.
So you must look, I mean, as you say, punk rock has been so written about and so examined, and, you know, like the story of the Sex Pistols, the story of the outrage has just been retold so many times over the past 30 years. You must have quite a different viewpoint on punk and punk subculture now, with the hindsight of 30 years, than you did when you wrote this in 1980.
I'm still surprised on how influential it is, the whole scene of doing things yourself in music, in literature, in filmmaking, in all kinds of arts forms, in radio, how it still reverberates in contemporary culture. So I'm really pleased that it's still relevant, like a lot of subcultures in the past, like, say, teddy boys, or have completely disappeared because it is simply has no link to our own existence now. But if you look at Waiheke Radio or local radio, it is all do-it-yourself ethos. So I think that was the mainstay of the punk legacy, is that we can still, or we should still, do things ourselves, be it in radio, television, on the internet, making your music, doing your art, or whatever. And I think that's still important. So in that sense, I'm quite pleased, and I hope that my book is a kind of a primer for people who want to know what it was like at the time, so they can make those links themselves to contemporary culture.
And you've got an event on the 20th to launch the book?
Yes, it's the official launch in 2 weeks' time at the Waiheke Art Gallery at Saturday the 20th of August at 2 p.m. and you're all most welcome to attend. I've got a few books for sale there because the book is actually published by myself. I don't have a publisher, I don't have a distributor. It's all on the internet, so if you order the book on the internet it gets printed for you individually, but I have a few copies here that I will be able to provide and sign, and happy to chat to everybody who comes along.
So how did you find that self-publishing process?
I just looked it up on the internet, yeah. You know, as you do, and it's the company is called CreateSpace in the United States, which is, I think, a subsidiary of Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure how the business links are there, but they allow you to publish whatever you like in whatever format you like, whatever font, the size of the book, everything you have to do yourself. You send them the files, and they print it for you at a really cheap rate. And then they also offer marketing opportunities through Amazon. It gets an automatic site on Amazon.com, on all the, even the German and the UK and the Japanese sites. And then they also offer marketing channels to internet bookshops. And so it's available all around the world, and it gets printed on demand. It doesn't sit on a shelf somewhere in a warehouse. That's the beauty of, the technology these days.
And it's available as an ebook, I see, as well.
Yes, yeah. On Kindle only.
Yeah.
Which is a different process of publishing, but yeah. Yes, it is.
Good stuff. All right, so that's the 20th of August, 2 p.m. at the gallery, and you'll be spinning some tunes as well.
I won't, but my friend Peter Mack from Bass FM will.
Excellent. Good stuff. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Hans.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So the easiest way for people to get that, Amazon? Or yes. The gallery?
Yes.
Yep. Excellent.